This is the Horse Radio Network.
This is episode 505 of the Dressage Radio Show, official podcast of the United States Dressage Federation. On the Horse Radio Network, brought to you by Kentucky Performance Products and TotalSaddleFit.com. Today, we have a great show that includes discussions with top rider and manager at Helgstrand Dressage, Ulf Muller, as well as freestyle choreographer Beth Hall, and we're going to answer our listener question for the Total Saddle Fit Trainer Tip.
Reese Koffler Stanfield from Wellington, Florida.
And this is Philip Parks from Rockwood, Ontario, and you're listening to the Dressage Radio Show.
Hi, Phil. How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing, Reese?
Doing great. Oh, it is nice. A bit busy here this week, which is great. We're actually recording early because we have two horse shows this week, which doesn't happen very often, but we have a recognized show and a schooling show. So really everyone's showing on some level this week. Which is fun.
You're going to be running around.
Yeah, a little bit. But again, it's so fun to do it. We're kind of mid. We have a couple more weeks, so we have lots of stuff going on. So it's been quite fun. So we're enjoying that for sure.
Okay. Well, what else is going on in Florida?
It's a great week. So this week is actually Nations Cup week. So we'll have lots of fun things to talk about at the next show. But it's Monday, actually recording a little bit early this week, just because of the craziness. But we did have some great news from the Attaquan Dressage Global Dressage Festival week 9. And last week was a CPEDI 3-star. And I am super pleased to report that the U.S., they had a all-time high team score, which was fantastic, with David Botana, Rebecca Hart, Kate Schumacher, and Roxanne Trunnell. They earned a cumulative score of 441.488. Largely part of all the riders had career highs, I think. It was very, very good. And the Canadians were not that far behind, but 408. So that was fantastic. So it was really a great week. I was able to go to a lovely celebration for the WEG team, for the para, and all the medals that were won. So it's been a quite fun week with the para team. So keep an eye on our team. We're getting really ready for Tokyo, which is really cool.
Fantastic. So what do we have on the show for this week?
Yeah, so we're going to start off. We've got a great discussion. We have a two-part discussion, actually, with Beth Hall. She is a freestyle choreographer, and we're going to go through all the lower-level tests. That was a request from one of our listeners, all the lower-level freestyle tests as well for 2019. So enjoy the part one of a two-part series. Well, I am very excited tonight to have Beth Hall. She is the owner of Woodwind Studios that does custom freestyles, along with Music Kerr, which does catalog freestyles. And Beth is here to talk to us tonight about lower level freestyles. Beth, welcome to the show.
Hi, Reese. Thanks for having me.
I am so happy to have you because we work with you. You have been so wonderful with us and work with multiple of my students and along with me. And we made it to the national championships on our first level freestyle and just debuted a second level freestyle last week with Pam McKees Marcus, and it went quite well. And so you're a pleasure to work with, and I was really thankful that you were able to come on and chat with us.
Well, thank you, and I'm glad you're having that kind of success with your freestyle.
They're very fun, and I enjoy freestyles, but it's also, I'm not somebody that is musically inclined, so I have to work with someone like yourself. But what I love about your company is you're able to get freestyles for all levels, Grand Prix to you don't do a lot of training levels, but Grand Prix to the lower levels, and custom, and also with ones that are already made. Is that correct?
That's right.
I think it's
so fantastic. There are a lot of ways to go. It can be as custom as you want.
Well, and I think that's so fantastic. So we're going to talk a little bit about training level freestyles. I think this is a relatively new level, isn't it, for everybody?
It is. Yeah.
And so what are some of the requirements?
I think it was added not in the 2019, but maybe in the previous test.
Yeah, it's pretty new. And so what are some requirements that you need to do when you do a training level freestyle?
Basically, it's a circle in each direction at trot and canter. And you are required to show a serpentine and trot with loops no smaller than 15 meters. So if you have a horse with good bend, you can show the four loop serpentine. I would say rather than trying to do mirror image, if you need to add time to your trot, I would add a different type of serpentine, something like maybe a quarter line serpentine, so that you show it in two different ways. It also requires the stretchy circle. I personally think this is so much of a training exercise. I don't like to see it in the test. I would never include it in a higher level test, even if the horse was very good at it, just like I wouldn't include halt and rein back or walk pirouettes. But it is a requirement.
Got it. That makes sense. And so just from the basic level, like, how do you find the requirements at each level? How do you find that?
Well, if you go to the USDF forms and documents, it will show all of the 2019 tests, including the freestyle test.
Absolutely. And there's also a checklist. I think you sent this to me. I somehow got it. A checklist for freestyle riders and its rules and what you need to know. Correct? There's a whole document.
Yeah, I think it is.
I have just, on, I think it's under that same, you really do need to go into the USDF website and sort of look at all the documents that they have there.
You really want the USDF rules, guidelines, and definitions, and it's training through fourth level. And
yeah,
you type in Chapter 8A.
Chapter 8A.
It comes up as a PDF.
It's great. I think you actually sent it to me because I printed it out and it has the compulsory elements at all the levels, the forbidden elements, and then additionally allowed.
Yeah. And you need to be very, very careful about the transitions. They're not specific, but like at training in first level, you can't do anything like a walk to canter transition without intervening steps of trot. And you will get a deduction.
Yeah.
Yeah. Don't try those forbidden movements. They're forbidden.
Don't try them.
Yeah. But I wouldn't say it's entirely clear in the guidelines. They have cleaned it up a little bit in the last year, but you see, it still need to be careful about the transitions.
Mm-hmm. And especially,
I would say at training level, one problem you're going to encounter is endurance at the canter. I wouldn't show less than a minute and a half of canter, but if you're riding a true young horse coming up to training level, I think you might want to split the canter into two different segments and ride something like trot, canter, walk, canter, and end in trot. You might even want to do that at first level. But at training level, you might also be riding one of those good old school horses, and training level is his specialty. And he could go for 2 minutes at canter. So I think that's an important thing to look at training level, is what kind of endurance do you really have for the canter?
That makes a lot
good
of sense.
Tip,
and these are things, you know, Beth, when you work with her or another choreographer, they know the rules. I don't know the rule, you know, and you can read them, but it is really helpful to have somebody who knows kind of what's going on, because that is a bit of a challenge sometimes. So,
and you don't want the horse, if he starts to get tired, tipping more and more to the forehand and going faster and faster before you can finish the canter. It would be better to keep it in balance, go to the walk, and then go back to the canter in balance.
That makes sense. So now, in 2019, there is a rule that's on the books at the moment that you need a 63% at all levels to be eligible to ride a freestyle, correct?
Yes.
Yeah. So you have to ride a technical. You can't just, and it's the highest test of the level. So if you're riding a training level, it has to be a training level test 3, first level test 3, etc. So you have to make sure that you get those, that you do that before you enter, and you have to, and I'm just making sure, Beth, you have to have a copy of that test from a recognized show when you enter the freestyle.
So, yeah, it's been a long time that you've had to submit proof that you have the qualifying score. Mm-hmm. So once you get that test in your hands, you need to be very careful with it.
Don't lose it. Copy it and be ready to send it in.
Maybe take a picture of it on your phone.
Yeah, take a picture.
Right away.
Like, make sure you got it, because you're going to have to send it in to write it. Yep. Fantastic. Well, I think we are ready for first level. Can we move on to what are the requirements at first level freestyle after you've gotten your technical 63%? And then what are we eligible to do in the choreography?
Okay, you're required to do 10-meter circles in trot, 15-meter at canter, leg yield left and right at trot, lengthen the stride in trot and canter, and change of lead through trot. They have changed the requirements for lengthening medium extended. You are now required to show it on a straight line. You're allowed to show it on a bending line, but you won't get a technical score that way. It would only count towards choreography. So I think that's the big change in these new tests.
And talk a little bit about, I mean, you know, you've got to be able to do the technical movements that you design, right? I mean, you've got to be kind of careful with that.
It's a real tightrope that you do want to show the maximum difficulty of which that horse is capable without losing ease of movement. And I think it's the ease of movement you have to be very careful about. It would be better to drop a little difficulty and show that the horse can perform it easily and with competence rather than struggle with the difficulty. I have a system. I develop questionnaires at every level that I send to riders when I'm designing the choreography. And I write down every single way that you could potentially perform a movement, and I have them score it 1 to 5, with 5 being the best possible way for that horse to do it. Not necessarily the most difficult, just the best. And then when I design choreography, I'm trying to string together 1-5 to the next, to the next, to the next, so that the entire choreography shows that horse doing everything in the best way for him. And it's easy to do if you're designing your own choreography. Just think through all the ways, say, that leg yields could be shown and say, that's a 1. I can't possibly do it. That's a 5. We're great at that. So that on your own, you start to do the same thing.
That makes sense. And that's important because you have to be able to do it a couple times. I mean, you know, you're going to live with this freestyle a while. And I've had that challenge where, you know, we do it here in Florida and then maybe we don't do it again till the regional championships in September. So that is always a challenge, you know, to try to make sure that you're getting it sort of right, and that you can grow with the freestyle. And, you know, it definitely can be a tightrope, especially like right now, it's still kind of early in the season. We feel like it's not because we've been doing it a while now down here, but, you know, it's still early. So, you know, that's always been a challenge. And when you do the change of lead through the trot, you have to do it left and right, correct? You have to do it both directions.
Correct. Yes. You have to show it both ways.
Well, which makes sense. So again, you know, there's that tightrope balance between what you're doing technically and what you're doing artistically and how you sort of marry the two. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah. At first level and at second level, it's a simple change. But one of the difficulties of the lower levels is that it's very hard to change directions at canter. Mm-hmm. Once you hit third level and you've got a flying change, you can kind of move the horse around at will and show a lot of bend changes because you've got that flying change in your pocket. It's a little more awkward at training to second level because that change through the trot steps aren't going to sync up with music. It just feels a little awkward. But you might have to do those changes more than once in order to show enough variety in the canter. So it's not all left lead, left lead, left lead, and then you go do the right lead, and then you're out of it. So ideally, you do have good balance changes of lead through the trot at first level.
Yeah, that makes total sense. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Because, again, if you don't, it's expensive. You know, it's expensive, and it looks funny, you know?
Yeah.
And And yeah. I had this catch me once. I was trying to do it very artistically to the music, but it's still the change of lead through the trot, still 3 to 5 steps. And yeah. I was trying to be very artistic. And that was my one moment, shining moment to do that. And it wasn't, I got my technical score went way down because, you know, I was trying to ride it to the music, but you always have to remember the technical sort of trumps everything else. And so that's really important that you remember 3 to 5 steps on that change of lead through the trot. I learned that the hard way. So
You need a little bit of runway to work, you know, to be able to work with that, because you think, oh, I'll be really smart and do it across somewhere, and then it's like awkward and strange and weird.
You can buy yourself a little leeway in that by putting the phrase change at the point you trot and not encasing it within a phrase, so that you do need to trot on the phrase, but where you come out of it is a little bit looser. Some horses are just spot on consistent. I see some horses, it's always 4 steps or always 5 steps. But if you're not sure about that and you want some leeway, then don't put an E point in the music for that change of lead through the trot.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah, this is why I had Beth, because it kind of went over my head.
Helps you to not make so many mistakes.
Yes. Like, do what Beth just said. That is exactly what you want to do.
And as far as difficulty, I do like to see a rider project ahead a little bit. Like, what you do in the spring might seem a little bit too easy at the regional championships and really too easy at the national finals. So maybe challenge yourself a little bit now, knowing that in 6 months, you know you'll have it. I find that especially with juniors, they tend to really underestimate what they can do. And 6 months down the road, they're sorry. And they're a little bit stuck unless they re-edit the music. Because once that music is edited to fit, that's your freestyle.
Yeah, you're not changing it. Or you can, but it's a pain. Yeah, for sure. That makes sense. I'm like, you can.
Well, it's expensive, too.
Yeah, so. Exactly. It's expensive. It changes things a lot, for sure.
Yeah.
Well, fantastic. On the first level. So let's move. I am currently very familiar with second level freestyles. So.
You are indeed.
Really, because Beth has educated me. But Beth, tell us what we're looking for at second level.
Okay, you start to have more fun at second level. There's just more you can do. They have changed the requirements this year. It used to be travers or renvers. Now it's strictly travers. So you show shoulder in right and left, travers right and left. And renvers is allowed, but to me, that is just enough lateral work already. I wouldn't add renvers personally. Medium trot on a straight line, medium canter on a straight line, and then the simple change of lead, which is the canter walk canter to the right and the left. And you also show counter canter right and left. And that's really where you can add some difficulty. I had a client last season insert a 5-loop serpentine in counter canter, which scared me a little, but she was great at it and she won the national finals with it. So if you can make a 12-meter turn, that's a place you can really add difficulty.
I'm laughing because my horse couldn't, and we had a pretty tight serpentine loop in there, and I was like, Beth, I cannot do that. Like, no. And I didn't have the luxury. I had to like show it the next week. So I was like, yeah, that's not happening. We have got to check that out. So I'm kind of laughing on a personal note because I was like, oh no. But it is true. I mean, we enjoyed the second level because you could start to say, okay, Beth, like we're good at this. We're not good at this. You know, what can you do? And you had a couple freestyles already done, and one I just couldn't ride. I mean, it was just too hard for where we were.
Yeah.
And you really have to step back and say, you know, we're not prepared for that. and the technical score wouldn't go down. And so again, I would not recommend to do what we did, which was a fairly tight time frame. What is the normal time frame you like people to, not the frame we did, to prepare their freestyles, because this does take a while, especially if you're not, you haven't done them before.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it depends on the time of year because I'm so booked. So I have to look at my production schedule and where I could fit you in. But I would say in a perfect world, at least give it 2 months, because I find sometimes people have glitches they don't expect. Like, you do have to film your choreography. And if you're not set up to film and you're not used to it and you don't know how you're going to upload it, give yourself a little bit of time to sort that kind of thing out. If there's going to be any conflict between you and your trainer about what that horse can actually do, give yourself a little, well, look at the choreography and tweak it and make sure it's what is going to work.
Yeah, no, that's a great point, especially if you're working with a trainer, you know, or if you're working with a rider and you're the owner, you know, that it does have to really work together as a team with Beth, because it is, you know, sometimes everybody's expectations are a little bit different, or the music's a little bit different, or et cetera. Yeah. And it is important to work together, especially, you know, a lot of times it is a time consuming process. And I can tell you that from a personal experience, it is a time consuming thing. And then it takes a while to learn them. And if you're not used to learning a particular freestyle or have a method to do that, then so that's why giving yourself some time, you know, sometimes that doesn't work, but you know, what if your horse has an abscess and you have a week off, and then, you know, that shoots best production or whoever you're using's production schedule back. So, you know, there are some harder things when you think of freestyles. They are not actually easy, talking from personal experience recently, but you know, there's a lot to do, and we did it here in Florida, and we're joking, but in Florida, there's just a lot going on. So you may have a horse show, so you have to stop. And, you know, in our case, we had to get a technical score, and then we were hoping we would have it ready, but we we got the technical score. But, you know, there's just a lot of things that sort of creep up on you. So you have to really pay attention to that.
Sometimes you are so confident you want one style of music. And then when you actually, I'll sync it up with video so you can see the selection and see how they work. Sometimes you see it, and it's not what you imagined in your mind. And you just want a different style of music, so it turns into a little bit of a process. Mm-hmm. Or like you said, it's a little bit of music choices by committee. There could be an owner and a rider and a trainer and a parent involved.
Yeah.
So it's better to just let it be a process. Let it take some time.
Yep. And then just to kind of wrap up the second level, the half turn on the haunches, have you ever done those in a freestyle?
It is like throwing out an anchor while the freestyle sails on without you.
Yeah. That's what I was going to, I was like, I saw in the Additionally Allowed and I was like, ooh.
I don't care how good it is. It could be the best thing your horse does.
Don't do it.
Don't do it. For one thing, it takes a lot of time. When I'm doing junior freestyles where it's a requirement, I have to add 15 to 20 seconds of walk just to fit it in.
Wow.
And think about what you could do that would be dramatic in 15 to 20 seconds. You could blast an extension across the diagonal just in 10 seconds. And that's going to create more of a performance than inserting something that basically is standing still. And that you're not going to get a technical score on anyway. You're just really trying to build one technical score to another, to another, to another.
No, it makes sense. I have no idea why anybody you would want to do it. I don't know. And that is another thing. The time requirements at the lower levels, what is it?
It's a maximum of 5 minutes, and there's no minimum, which is very helpful. I wouldn't go under 4 minutes. I think you want to at least show that the horse is fit enough and athletic enough to at least go 4 minutes without stopping.
That makes sense.
And I think you want to show a little creativity, which takes a little bit more time. If you simply insert the technical movements one time and that's it. You're just not allowing yourself room to pad it with a little bit of originality.
Yeah, and that's the other thing. If you do things twice, you get two technical scores, and that score is averaged.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
So if you do it twice, be pretty sure you're doing it in ways where you'll get an equal score both times.
Right, which makes total sense.
And it's why it's the problem I have with putting mediums on the bending line. Mm. I'm not convinced that most horses can produce it to the same level as the straight line. So why get a 7 and a 6 when you could potentially get 2 7s?
Yeah, absolutely. Makes total sense. And just a reminder, you know, at second level, the forbidden is any movement or transition found in tests above the level, except that are listed and additionally allowed. Just turn on the forehead, half turn on the haunches, Ron Bear's medium canter, and or trot on a curve line. So, but
and
the
importantly,
line,
you can't halt and canter off. You have to insert some steps of trot.
Fantastic. Well, Beth, thank you so much for coming on and going through these levels with us. They are fun. It is a process. So if you're going to take it on, you know, enjoy the process because it's a process. But Beth, how can our listeners find you online?
In two places. I am at www.woodwindstudios.com. And www.musicur.com, M-U-S-I-K-U-R. And if what you want is lower cost, look at Musicur. What you want is the absolute full Monty custom freestyle, go to Woodwind Studios.
Fantastic. Thanks so much, Beth.
All right. Thank you, Reese.
Well, right after this commercial break from Kentucky Performance Products, we'll come back with Ulf Muller. He is the manager of Helga Strand Dressage in America.
They had been together for years, since he was just a colt. When he got stubborn, she would gently coax him on. When he got scared, she would reassure him and stroke him gently on the neck. She spent hours building his confidence, his strength, his balance, teaching him to dance. Pirouette, passage, piaf, the final salute. The crowd jumped to its feet and cheered. It was the moment that it's been a lifetime training for. But all she could think about was how special he was and how she loved him. This love story is brought to you by Endure Extra, providing high-fat calories, direct-fed microbials, and natural vitamin E to support optimal condition and performance. The horse that matters to you matters to Kentucky Performance Products. Call 859-873-2974 or visit kppusa.com to order today.
Well, this evening, it is our pleasure to have Ulf Muller on. He is a world champion young horse rider, amazing trainer, and he's here in America as manager of Helga Strand Dressage. Ulf, welcome to the program.
Yeah, welcome also from my side.
We have, Philip and I met you many years ago at the Young Horse Trainers Conference, the first year at Scott Hassler's, and I can't remember what year it was, but I will never forget. I had never been exposed to training young horses, and to watch you come in and train the horses was quite an experience. So it's fun to have you on several years later.
Thank you very much.
So, Ulf, tell us a little bit, just to start the interview, about yourself and your history, because it's a really very, very interesting history in the horse sport.
No, but it's a very easy thing. You know, my father, he started breeding horses, and so I was from a young boy on, I was riding young horses and showed them also for the Pferden auction, because at that time that was the most prestigious thing, that you can have a horse at the Pferden auction. Then Mr. Köhler, who was the founder of the Pferden Auction, he asked me if I would like to ride auction horses in the Pferden Auction, and for sure I love to do this. Then over this, I got contact to Mr. Rehbein, who was at that time the best professional trainer rider in, I would say, worldwide. Herbert Rehbein, unfortunately, died too early. Then my parents want me to study, and that was not my plan. But as a good son, I said, okay, I will do it. But then I want to study veterinary medicine. Then I got a place, so I studied, but I went on riding young horses in the Pferden Auction. And when I finished my studies, when I had my doctor title, I started to work full-time for Pferden as a sales manager. I did this 5 years. So in total, I was there 15 years. Then Mr. Kasselmann from the famous PSI auction asked me if I would not like to start working for him. And for me, it was another big step forward. So I said, yes, I would like to do this. I did this for nearly 19 years. And then the next step to develop, and in my age now is not so much time anymore. So then I had the chance to work for Andreas Höchstrand. And I think everyone could see now how busy he is and how active and how much forward he is to bring the whole horse spirit on the next level. And I'm proud that I can be a part of this. And now I'm there for 2 years now. And yeah, and we'll go on as long as I can. So that's my life in very short words. Yeah.
I think good. It's important to emphasize that you did graduate as a veterinarian, because you are also a veterinarian as well as riding. I think that must have been a very busy time in your life.
Yeah, but I call myself always an academic veterinarian because I have no knowledge. And when you also see in this what developed in the last 20 years in the veterinary world with all these machines and things what they have. So if you are not always into this, you are very much behind. So for me, I have this title as a doctor, and maybe I can read an X-ray, but that's it. I would never call myself a vet. It's real in comparison to all the good wits.
Okay.
So Ulf, one of the things we really wanted to chat with you as well was some of your favorite exercises, starting with young horses. So starting with three-year-olds, and we're going to go through four, five, and six-year-olds. What's your favorite couple exercises and expectations for a three-year-old?
Yeah, okay. With the three-year-old, you don't do so many exercises. What we normally do, and I think that's quite a good plan, we start them riding in spring, and then we try that we can ride after some days, walk, trot, canter around, mostly indoors. And when this is working, and then you can sit on the horse without problem, very often when they are not stallions, we send them back to the field, send them back outside, and start again in autumn. Because otherwise, it gets too boring for the horses, because there's not so much you can do. The other thing is with the stallions, because it's a little bit more difficult to send them outside. So there you go on riding. But also, it's mainly really that you ride around, walk, trot, canter, with a little bit control that you can like really easily start or do transitions. But there's not really a program. It's like always, the horse tells you a little bit how much the horse is able to do. When you are a good trainer, you are able, or you listen to the horse, and then the horse tells you what to do. When they got 4 year old, then it depends a little bit what your plan is with the horse. If you want to do like to a 4 year old championship, then you have to train the lessons. And I think we are now in a big advantage that we have this international test for 4, 5, 6, and now also 7 year olds, which are the same everywhere in the world because they are FDI tests. And I think that's a good thing that this test tells you what a horse normally should do in this age. Yeah. And that I think is a very good guideline. Because everywhere in the world, people have fear that they do too much with the horses. And so I think that's quite a good guideline. It's not a must that a horse, let's say a six-year-old horse, is doing a flying change now and today. But it should be a guideline that a horse during his life as a six-year-old should have a confirmed flying change, for example.
Yeah, yeah, and I love that. I love that you said that, because it's a guideline. It doesn't mean it has to happen. And that was one of the things we talked a lot about when we all studied with you and Scott and Michael at the Young Horse Conference, was what horses should go in that route and what horses, you know, do you listen to the rider and listen to them? And you always stress that to all of us, which I think was really good. But there is an international guideline of what can happen. So I think that's really a cool point that you made. Fantastic.
Yeah, I think that's a very important thing, you know, like very often you see that people do too less. It's also a problem, you know, because horses are like kids. When they learn better when they are young, and the older they get, the more difficult it gets for them to learn. So, and often do you see 5 and 6 year old horses And they know nothing because the owner, the trainer, thinks he is doing too much, or the horse is not developed enough or whatever. But I think the horses, they develop with work and not without work.
I think it's important to keep them interested in doing new things and maybe not drilling the movements or drilling flying changes, but try it when the horse feels good, see what happens. You know, and for me, that really helps me to have a plan about how I'm going to train the horse in the next 3 weeks. For instance, if I try something difficult, a flying change, well, I think we use the flying changes a lot because it helps to confirm the horse's balance and all those things. But so I say I try a flying change, it doesn't happen, that doesn't matter for me, but I sort of get an idea about where the horse is in their training and where they need to go to next to make something like a more upper level movement more successful later on. So I think that's how I sort of look at these things and when I'm dealing with young horses.
For me, it's important that when you start something new on, let's say, on Monday, and you have really a little bit troubles or problem, but that everything is fine on Friday. And then you know that your work was good and that the way you are on is the right way. And I think that's very important, that you also feel after a while. And if you don't come to this feeling, then you really have to think if you maybe have to change your plans and go a different way. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's important in understanding horses and just being a thoughtful rider. I had a question about breeding a little bit because we had talked about how long, long that you've been involved in the sport and the auctions, and you've seen, I'm sure, thousands and thousands of young horses. What do you think about the breeding? Because I think there's a lot of discussion now about like we're breeding better and better dressage horses. Are they becoming easier to train or, more the same with more ability and gates, or what are your thoughts there on that?
We have in the last 20 years there is like such a big jump forward in the horse breeding, which I think never happened before. 20 years ago I rode Sandowit in the World Championships, and people, they looked at him like a world wonder number 8 because he has this nice trot. But now every second horse is trotting like this, and so that is really nice swinging supple trot with a lot of front leg. It's now normal, and at that time it was totally a new thing. And in the last 20 years that developed so much, so the breeders, they did so many nice things for us and make the training so easy. Like we have this uphill horses, we have to ride our horses now deep. 20 years ago, if we rode a horse deep, we had to fear that we would not get it up again. And now we only have to take care that we ride them down and deep and over the back. And I think that's much, much easier for most of the riders to ride a horse a little bit deeper. So I think the breeders did really, really a lot of things for us. And also when you look at the marks now, today, let's say 75, 80 is quite normal. Yeah. And when Dr. Rainer Klimke won with Ahlerich in the Olympic Games, he won with a 69 something. So that is also a development from the breeders, from the breeding, from the potential of the horses. So that's fantastic.
Yeah, it's fantastic. So if when you talk about, developing a young horse and looking for qualities for an FEI horse, what are some things that you look for?
Yeah, that's a very good question.
Yes, I know. Taking notes right now.
It's so difficult to describe. Let's say what you need for sure is you need three gates. You need a walk, a trot, a canter. You don't need it with too much ground cover, not too big, but nice uphill with a nice lift of the front legs. But what is the same important, and for sure you need confirmation and then good legs and all this, that the horse lasts long enough. But what is also for sure the same important is the interior, the head, the willingness, the trainability, also the understanding from the horse to repeat and repeat and repeat without getting too bored, and that there's really the horse willing to do this. I always say there are for sure more people or more young people in the world. They can run as fast as Usain Bolt, but not everyone wants to live without pit and drinks and parties and whatever. And that's the same with the horses. There is for sure so many talented horses in the world, but they have to have the right interior, and they have to ride or to find the right rider and the people, the person who understands them, and then they will become a brilliant horse. But there's a lot of things which have to fit together.
Yeah, and some luck in there too, huh?
Absolutely. All, in the end, luck is most of the things because, like I said, the horse has to stay sound. The whole way has to work out. There's a lot of luck.
Yeah.
And I always smile a little bit about these people that they see a three-year-old horse and say, this will be the next Grand Prix horse. It can maybe become a Grand Prix horse, but for me, a Grand Prix horse is a horse which at least gets in this high lessons, like Piaf and Passage, and this is what makes a big difference, at least seventh. Yeah, that is for me a Grand Prix horse, not a horse which is maybe going in a horse show with three competitors and make the 62, and then you say, wow, look, now I have the next top Grand Prix horse. Yeah,
yeah, yeah, for sure.
It's the quality of the gates, the quality of the thing lessons, like Piaf and Passage. This is for me a Grand Prix horse, when the horse is able to do this walk, this Piaf Passage, and good transitions.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Ulf, we can literally listen to you all afternoon, but you've been so generous with your time. And also, just something, you host events in the winter at Helgastrand, and they're typically free of charge. You can go. And we saw you last or 2 weeks ago, you did an event, and it's just very cool to see the training. So if people are down next year, I have a feeling you'll probably do it again. But how can our listeners find you online if they're interested about what you're doing here in America?
Yeah. Yeah, we are also working on this. We are also really trying to build up a little bit like a network that people get more information. The first time we did an open house with training, it worked really good. We had a lot of people. The last time, the communication was not good enough. But also this, we will be better. We will have it on the website. And I think today also, when you have something at Facebook, it will spread out to everyone.
Yes.
And all the people will read it. And I think also here in our community in Wellington, people talk about it, and then the one person informs the next person. So I think we will make it.
Word travels fast there. Yeah.
And what I really like is that we do it for free.
Yes.
Because I can really see how hungry the people are for this information, for this education. And okay, we our first idea is that we sell horses, but we also want to show the people that we have good horses, that they build up confidence to us. And I must say, always after this open houses, we had more interest from people, more emails, more requests. So I think we will go on doing this.
Fantastic. Sure. But like you said, it's for free. And so, check out the website and Facebook as well, Helgastrand Dressage, so that you can find out when it is, because we knew about it. I don't know, same thing. Someone told me about it and we went over. But it's really cool that it's for free and you can go and watch really, really amazing training and really, really amazing horses and riders. So, Ulf, again, thank you so much for coming on the show. We really appreciate it. And we'd love to do it again sometime.
Okay. Thank you very much. Thank you. Bye.
Well, Phil, I still loved our interview we had with Justin from Total Saddle Fit last week about the stability stirrup leathers. If you didn't get a chance, Justin's so cool. And he talked about how he actually developed these stirrups and why they're the leather they are and the width they are. And Phil, you and I are both using these stirrup leathers and I love them. How about you?
I've been having a fantastic experience, in comfort and in their ability to help your legs stay quieter. So we thank Justin for coming on our show and talking about them, but also thank him for his great products and the girths and the saddle pads and everything at Total Saddle Fit now comes on with free shipping for the next little while. That's what he was talking about also. So you can have a free trial, you can have free shipping, check out all their products at totalsaddlefit.com.
This week's dressage training tip is brought to you by Total Saddle Fit, home of the shoulder relief girth at totalsaddlefit.com.
So Phil, you've got a fantastic Total Saddle Fit tip of the week for us, or a question. I don't actually know what it is. So what is it?
Well, this came to us through our Facebook, and I think it's pretty great when we get questions through our Facebook and we can try and tackle. So here's this question from Lisa. Many times over the years, transitions, lots of transitions is part of our talk and training solutions. But what does that mean exactly in terms of quantity? How do I know how many transitions and how frequently do I ride these transitions? I'll just talk to you. There's a lot more to this question, but I think we can just cover it by talking about the transition problems.
Absolutely. So I think this is Lisa from Minnesota. So I'm going to give a shout out to her because she's fantastic. And I went up to that group and did a clinic in November. So shout out to Lisa. She's a dedicated listener and a great person. So shout out to you. So I also know that her pony that we're talking about, but you know, really the thing about transitions is they are really to develop muscle and also help with horses' balance. So it's a great how much is always the question, right? I think that's a little bit where you have to come in as a rider, feel how your horse is doing. You know, it's really hard to say, you know, today was a Monday for my almost Grand Prix horse, and he did a lot of transitions. That was sort of my goal, but I am actively trying to build his strength, to build his strength in his back and to build his rebalancing. So he's doing a lot of transitions right now, but he also is, you know, it is, we're full blown work right now. So the horses are quite fit, knock on wood, everything's going well. And so we're doing a lot of transitions, but I taught some lessons this morning, and again, I'm working with pretty fit horses, and we did a lot of transitions, again, knowing that we wanted to strengthen these horses' backs, and we wanted to get them, you know, we're trying to step up a level or getting more confirmed at a certain level. So I would just say, as you think about riding transitions, you know, think about, it's like doing a squat at the gym. There's a certain point where you can do tons of squat. You know, you can, you know, for me, I have also had an injury, that type of thing. Like I can't, if I am working on squats, I can't go out and say, I'm going to do 100 of them. You know, maybe today I do 5 and tomorrow I do 6 and then I take an easier day and then I can do a few more. So I think it's important to think of transitions also as the horse is having to carry more weight and sit a little bit more behind. So it can make them sore. So you've got to listen to your horse. You've also got to think about, are they transitions within the gate? Are they transitions between the gates? Those are all important things to think about as you do them. But transitions are really important. I think they need to be done, you know, kind of have an idea in your mind of a methodical way of thinking about how many you're doing so that you don't just go out and do 100 and make your horse sore. But in general, I think you can really think about that as you're riding along. Phil, what do you think?
So we do talk about a lot of transitions, you know, every time we're discussing training problems. I think you have to do transitions with an idea of what you're trying to fix in mind or what you're trying to accomplish with them. So, you know, let's just talk about the lower levels, a training level horse or a first level horse. You know, when I do my stretch work, you know, to begin my ride, you know, walk, trot, canter, I do transitions to make sure the horse is listening to my forward aids and my backwards aids. So maybe they aren't going to be the best balance transitions, but I want to know that the horse is going to go forward when I ask. So, you know, I'm walking around on a longer rein, maybe even a loose rein, depending on the horse. And then I put my leg on. I want to feel a reaction. Right. And then I'm going along and trot, and, you know, I give a little half up with my seat or I give a little contact on the reins, and I want to know that they're listening and come back to me. So I think that's kind of the most basic kind of transition. You're doing them between gates. Normally I do 4 or 5 between walk and trot. And then for the younger horses, I like to do a lot more to get the trot canter transition is really a great way to get your energy going and get that horse loosened up. So I would do probably 4 or 5 on each side as far as those, you know, kind of on a 20-meter circle or on a curve somewhere, you know, and then, you know, they get another walk break, and then I pick up the reins. And then now I'm just, you know, I've kind of got a plan for the ride, what I want to do with the horse. And I also have to have a plan for what I want to do with transitions. So if I'm trotting around and working, you know, trot to halt, I'd like to do that transition early on, again, just get the horse listening. Then I have to have an idea of, you know, what's the normal idea that the horse has, what's his normal problem, and I just do a transition trot to halt. Some horses are crooked, some horses don't come with enough energy into it, so I, you know, I just do an evaluation transition, and I go, oh, you know, that wasn't very good, or that was pretty good, but, and then I say, okay, what do I want for my next transition to be? And then I would do probably at least two more. Okay, the first one was crooked. The second one I want straighter. And if the second one's straighter, great. And the third, by the time the third one rolls around, if it's even straighter, even better, then I'm done with that, right? Then I move on, go the other side or whatever. But I want to ensure that as I'm doing transitions, that something is being accomplished. And as long as the transition gets better from the first one to the third one, or maybe it's the sixth one, then I'm okay with it. It doesn't have to be perfect, but it just has to be a little bit better. And then, you know, do some other transitions on the other side. And then I, you know, make a new plan, whether I'm going to go to leg yield or whatever. So, I don't have a set plan for I'm going to do 50 transitions throughout my ride, but I'm going to say I'm going to be accomplishing something with my transitions. And for sure, for the upper level horses, I really make sure that for every half halt that I give, I get a response. Otherwise, it becomes a transition after, you know. So if I'm going along in trot, I want to give a little half halt to rebalance the horse in a corner. You know, that's where I'm normally giving half halts. And something happens, I'm happy. If nothing happens, then, of course, I'm going to come right back down to walk or a halt. So, again, this is idea of transitions with a purpose. And I think as long as you're doing that within your ride, you're teaching the horse something and they're becoming better balanced and they're becoming better in tune to the riders. And you'll have a better time, you know, the next ride. And then 10 rides after, the horses get stronger. And that's a progressive training. But I'm not just doing transitions for the sake of doing them. I think
right,
really pointless. The horse doesn't learn anything.
I love you. Progressive training through transitions is really important. And the fact that they are good and useful transitions, I think is fantastic. Hey, Phil, just real quick, you said at the beginning of backwards aids, you're meaning going backwards, right? When you say that.
I'm going if they're in a certain, you know, if their rhythm is too fast and I give an aid to slow it down, that they slow down. If they're in trot and I want to walk, I can accomplish a downwards transition and or a halt, you know.
So fantastic. That's what I mean, I think I knew what you meant, but I wasn't sure if everyone else.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, cool. So I always think of the leg as a forward aid and contact, or you know, a half halt tightening of your core muscles as a backwards aids. Those are, you know, so that you can, and you know, it's like getting in a car. I want to make sure that the gas pedal works and the brake pedal works. Right. I'm not going to get going and driving and turning and, you know, if those two things don't work. So, yeah, that's, I try and break it down to the basics, right, you know, in the beginning of the ride.
Fantastic. Well, I love it. Well, great question, Lisa. And as always, everyone, feel free to send us Facebook messages. We love it, and we will get them on the show. As always, you can find our show notes and links to today's guests on our website, dressageradio.com. Like us on Facebook, just search Dressage Radio Show. Follow us on Twitter at Horse Radio. My website is maplecrestfarmky.com, and my email is reese@horseradionetwork.com.
I think the best way to contact me is through Facebook, or my email is philip@horseradionetwork.com. I'd like to thank our sponsors for allowing us to put on a show. And don't forget to check out all the other shows on the Horse Radio Network at horseradionetwork.com.
As always, keep your heels down and your shoulders back, and we look forward to talking with you next week.